Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. As you may have heard already, our Get Lit with All of It book club has entered into an exciting new partnership with the New York Public Library. So what does that mean? It means that the library has acquired thousands of extra e-copies of the book that we're going to be reading each month. And you can get a copy of the book for a free three-week rental now. Head to wnyc.org/getlit for more information about that exciting new partnership. And follow us on Instagram at All of It WNYC for book club content. And the book we're going to be reading together this month is the newest novel from National Book Award winner James McBride. It's called Deacon King Kong. James was originally going to be our Get Lit selection this month, so back in the beginning of March, before the city went on pause, and on publication day for the book Deacon King Kong, James McBride stopped by WNYC to give us a little preview of the book before we all got started reading. So now that we're all going to be reading Deacon King Kong together, we thought it was a good time to revisit our conversation with James, who will introduce you to the world he created in this rollicking, heartfelt novel. I started by asking James McBride about Sportcoat, the protagonist of Deacon King Kong.
He's just an old deacon that's he's a drunk, and he's a deacon in his church, and they call him King Kong because that's the rot gut he likes to drink. So that's just one of his nicknames.
All right, we start there. Right away, the action starts on page one of this novel. I was going to ask you to read the first two paragraphs for us.
All right. This is entitled Jesus is Cheese. Deacon Cuffy Lampkin of Five Ends Baptist Church became a walking dead man on a cloudy September afternoon in 1969. That's the day the old deacon, known as Sportcoat to his friends, marched out to the plaza of the Causeway Housing Projects in South Brooklyn, stuck an ancient .38 Colt in the face of a 19-year-old drug dealer named Deems Clements, and pulled the trigger. There were a lot of theories floating around the projects as to why old Sportcoat, a wiry, laughing, brown-skinned man who had coughed, wheezed, hacked, guffawed, and drank his way through the cause houses for a good part of his 71 years, shot the most ruthless drug dealer the projects had ever seen. He had no enemies. He had coached the project baseball team for 14 years. His late wife, Hetty, had been the Christmas club treasurer of his church. He was a peaceful man, beloved by all. So what happened?
That's all we're going to give you.
What happened indeed.
So the book is set in 1969.
Right.
Is there a reason for that?
That just fell out the sky. I mean, that was the year the Mets won the World Series, and New York was still, when New York was different then. We were more forced to get along a little more. We were forced to interact with each other more. Our neighborhoods were more, I won't say they were more integrated. They were actually separate, but we had to sort of deal with each other more. So it made New York interesting.
Coexist in a way.
Right, coexist.
So the book has so many characters. We learn about Sportcoat. We learn about his neighbors, the folks at church, the police, some mobsters. And they're very detailed. You have a lot of detail about their lives. I'm curious why.
Well, I mean, when you're from this town, you can't help see the detail of other people's lives. If you're riding the subway and taking the bus, which I spent most of my young life doing. And the details tell the story, really. Anybody can just plop a person in a novel. That's young writers do it all the time. You know, he threw the gun out the window, and then he jumped out the window, and then he hit the ground. He started. But if there are no details, then you don't care about the character. And the characters are what sell the story.
My guest is James McBride. The name of his novel is Deacon King Kong. You write a memoir. You write short story collections. What is it you like about writing novels?
That I don't have to work with anybody else. Well, novels make your dreams come true. You know, novels allow you the space to talk about the good in people. Because we live in a world where heroes don't always succeed. And sometimes, you know, heroes die and villains succeed. And there are things that go wrong. But in novels, you can find the slice of goodness in everyone. And you can weave those together into the kind of parable that makes you feel good about getting out of bed. I mean, if you're not going to write a story, a book that makes people feel good, why write it in the first place? You know? So all of my books have that business of hope and, you know, all the good corny stuff. And if you think it's corny, read another book. I mean, you have to really believe that people are good. So I've reached the point in my life where I realize that cynicism has overrun American society. In part, you know, we all know why. But and that's really, that's a dream killer for young artists and for young writers and for young musicians and artists of any type. Skepticism is okay because skepticism roots itself. Comedy is rooted in skepticism. Mm-hmm. And so great art comes out of comedy. So skepticism is a seed for good art. But cynicism is toxic. It's poison. So you have to really be careful. You have to always believe, which I do, that there are more good people than bad, and that our commonality as human beings makes us special and unites us. That's our connective tissue, our commonality, our common desire to be good people.
How can we protect ourselves and those around us from cynicism?
Well, I just don't pay no mind to it. I mean, I'm not interested in someone. When I wrote, I think one of my second or third book, a guy said to me, Miracle of St. Anna, which was made into a movie by Spike Lee, is about a little boy who was, who meets a black soldier. And this black guy came up to me in California. He said, "Why write that book?" He said, "Huck Finn's been written already." So I said to myself, I don't even remember my response to him other than, I just don't allow that kind of negativity into my thinking. It turns out, by the way, that he was a writer and he blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, I don't care.
You know how that goes.
I just don't care. I just don't factor that into my thinking. I close that off, you know.
For our readers, some people we actually gave away some of the books, who are buying it today, who are going to dive in the next 3-4 weeks. Is there something particular you want them to pay attention to, either in the story arc or a particular character, or maybe just a scene that you, when you finished it, you were like, yes,
well,
I like this.
I personally like Sister Paul the best.
Okay.
She's a 106-year-old, you know, who's living in a nursing home, and she helps unravel matters. Because the book is centered around a piece of missing art that, you know, that this Italian guy has to move, and there's some money involved. And, you know, always when you're moving in the middle of these narratives, these long novels, this isn't necessarily long, but in a long story, sometimes you need to buoy up the center in order to have the connective tissue, just to have some bone to wrap around, if you will. So I introduced this business of the art, which basically ties everyone, this entire community together. So on the surface, the story about an old deacon who gets drunk, goes out into the plaza, shoots the worst, like the most horrible cat he could shoot. He was the worst guy. You wouldn't want to shoot this guy. He shoots him, but he doesn't kill him. And then the waves waves wash over the neighborhood, and we see all of these different people, their interactions as a result of this one act. But the deeper thing that ties these people together isn't a piece of art. That's really, that involves love. So I'd like readers to, and this woman, Sister Paul, really understands that.
That was my conversation with James McBride from March 3rd, Publication Day. James is this month's Get Lit with Olivet Book Club selection, and we'll be hosting a virtual event with James and a musical guest. We can't wait to tell you about her later in the week. That's happening on April 30th, so mark your calendars now. And for more information about the event and our new partnership with the New York Public Library, head to wnyc.org/thegreenspace and follow us on Instagram at @OlivetWNYC. That's where we hold the book club in between the big events. It's really a lot of fun. We often gather there with questions and polls and all the like. By the way, we attempted to correct our technical difficulties with author Barbara Ehrenreich, but we were unable to make a connection that sounded good enough to put on the air. So we thank you for her time and you listeners for your patience.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.